Hey guys, this is Richard from Wichita, and I guess I would be leading this for Wrecking Crew Radio. I wanted to share with you some cool 80s things that have happened while I was in California. I happened to stay at a hotel called the Grand Manchester Hyatt, big hotel right by the San Diego Bay. And the first night we were there, my son was hungry, it was late at night, and the vending machine wasn't working. So he and I walked across the street a little place called Kansas City Barbecue, which we thought was kind of funny. We go halfway across the United States and yet we're still eating barbecue in a place called Kansas City Barbecue. I thought it was kind of odd. There was a lot of memorabilia in the bar and related to Top Gun. Man, there's just several things Top Gun. There was even a Top Gun neon sign in the window. Well, the Friday that we were there, we took a tour of the bay, and the guy giving the tour mentioned that Kansas City Barbecue was the location where they filmed the bar scene from the movie Top Gun. The infamous piano that Anthony Edwards played on, it's still there. It's right in the corner. Matter of fact, we ate right by it. So I thought that was kind of cool. Got a picture of the outside of it anyway. Apparently, they had a fire a couple years ago and some of the memorabilia got burned, but kind of a cool 80s thing. Now, on the other side of our hotel was a building apparently that used to be the police station there in downtown San Diego. It's kind of an abandoned building now, getting ready to get torn down. It's kind of got a real interesting Spanish type architecture to it. And apparently that is where they filmed the 1970s movie Attack of the Killer Tomatoes and the 1980s sequel Return of the Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. I think that's the title of it, or maybe it's just Return of the Killer Tomatoes. The sequel, of course, was George Clooney's theatrical film debut, which he likes to tend to forget about. I will have to share with you that we did at the Universal Studios VIP tour, and if you ever have an opportunity to take that, you must. The VIP tour allows you to actually get off the tram on several places, visit several of the sets, walk right up to several cool sets, and we also took a visit to the props department. A two-story warehouse, and we were able to just walk around for quite a while looking at all the different props and stuff. A lot of cool stuff. They had a whole aisle full of just body parts and bones, and a whole aisle full of spears and shields and the swords from, dating back to the silent films of the 20s. So, very, very cool. Highly recommend that. And with that, let me go ahead and leave you a quick comment on the movie The A-Team. I had a chance to see that this past weekend. I went in with very low expectations, and really up until about a week ago, didn't even think I was going to see it. I wasn't really that interested in it. But saw some trailers last week. I thought it might be worth checking out. So went in with low expectations, and you know what? I was pleasantly surprised. I really enjoyed it. It was a fun, mindless action flick, and you have to enjoy those. Rampage Jackson did an excellent job as B.A. Bosco Baracus. He really channeled Mr. T several times. There was moments where it really was like I was listening to Mr. T. He really did a much better job than I thought he would. Charlto Copley was the actor from District 9. He played the character of Murdoch, and again, he did an excellent job. Bradley Cooper as Face, excellent job. I thought Liam Neeson was a little underutilized. He did a fine job, but it was just, I think it could have done a little bit more. And we definitely could have seen more of Jessica Biel. Now, her character was not a big part of the plot, and really in a way, but I personally like Jessica Biel and, thought she could have been seen a little bit more of in the film, one way or another. Sorry for the long voicemail. Just wanted to share some things with you. Been a while since I called in. I'm going to continue to hear your pleasant voices tomorrow, I guess, as I work my way through the lunar cast and the Wrecking Crew radio. But guys, as always, take care, and we'll talk to you soon.
Welcome to Wrecking Crew Radio. Now your hosts of Wrecking Crew Radio, Jay and Stu.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Wrecking Crew Radio. He's Stu.
And I'm Jay.
This is because of what you did to me last week. Where you jumped in real quick, like, I'm Stu. I'm like, okay, well, you are Stu.
He's Jay.
And he's
Mike. Wow.
Who's that?
Whether he wants to be called it or not, he's
Questionable Mike.
You might as well get over it, dude. Who's actually here with us today, so that's kind of cool.
Surprise.
Wrecking Crew this week, we have an interview that everybody needs to stick around and check out. It's a little bit different.
Yes, it is.
It was kind of interesting and a lot of fun. It was a little bit different for us, too. We know this person a little bit better than
more
most.
On a personal level than most.
Especially you.
Yeah.
You guys are very close, if you want to think about it.
Yeah, he shaves me.
He did shave you. Now you got to listen to the interview. What else we got this week? We have, I don't even know. Well, I should, and like right now, I'm like, brain fart, don't know. I told you what we were going to talk about this week. We may talk. Oh, we're going to review The Offspring, duh. And, yeah, and whatever else comes our way. Oh, and we're going to review a movie that we both watched recently on DVD. So let's go ahead without further ado. Wow, this is a short intro for us. Not that they're usually long. They're usually about 5 minutes, but this one's going to be about two.
It's usually about 5 inches.
Let's go ahead and jump into, what do you want to lead off with? Interview, movie review, or music review this week?
Payday?
Yeah, I can't help you there. No.
Let's do the movie.
Okay, so we're going to go into a DVD review right about now. Funk, soul, brother. So have you ever had a song in your iTunes that you know is mislabeled? Maybe you have a duplicate and you're just looking for a program that can search those out and get rid of the extras for you. Well, Tidy Songs is an easy and powerful program that will fix any missing or mislabeled song details. It'll add album artwork, it'll remove duplicate songs, and it'll help to organize your music. With Tidy Songs, you can fix misspelled song details, you can fill in missing artists, years, and genres, you can seek out and find that missing album art, and more. And the best part is, it's all automatic. You don't have to type anything. For more information or to get your copy of Tidy Songs, just head over to our website, www.pennycult.com, and click on the Tidy Song button at the top right of the page. You can't miss it. And trust me, I've used it myself, and it's pretty damn cool. That's Tidy Songs. Check it out at pennycult.com. DVD. So most recently, I found out about a film that apparently was on TV a couple years back, but I don't think anybody really knew that.
Not necessarily film, so it's a cartoon.
No, it's, well, film cartoons can be films.
Well, yeah, true.
It's actually going to be coming out on DVD for the mass public in September, I think. So we're going to talk about it for a few brief moments. And then we're going to let you know.
And that's it. Thank you.
If we think you should go see it or check it out or not, if you didn't get to see it when it was on TV. I stumbled across this little gem.
You all right?
Yes. It hurt my toe a little bit, but I'm good.
Is that why you couldn't make the class?
Yeah, dude. You should have even seen it. It was like red and poofy for a couple days.
Robin.
Turtles Forever.
Yes.
It is called Turtles Forever, and what this film is, wow, okay, so this is kind of interesting to explain. In 2003, there was a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle cartoon that I did not personally watch. Did you watch it at all? Also, in 1987, there was a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle cartoon, which I did watch.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for those of you who listen to Obscure 80s, you know we did a full Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle episode where Stu and I both informed everyone that we were big fans of the comic book before the TV series.
And that's why we're going to be live Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yes.
Soon.
So what this movie is, it's basically they took the idea that the 1986 Turtles have traveled into an alternate dimension.
It's almost like The One.
It's actually almost the exact same storyline as Crisis on Infinite Earths, which is a DC thing. Almost exactly the same storyline. Where even it comes to the like root one, the one that started it all, and there's Infinite Earths that branched off that one. That's
like
all.
The one with Jet Li, the movie, the one.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, it uses the multiverse theory. Mm-hmm. The 1986 Turtles have traveled into an alternate dimension accidentally while chasing the Technodrome and Krang and Shredder into the world of the 2003 Turtles. Now, as everybody who watched the 86 ones knows, they're really goofy, they're really cartoony, everything's silly. The 2003 one was a lot darker and a lot more serious, and they were drawn a lot tougher looking. So what happens is they are now in this world, and it's like when turtles collide, right? Because you've got, it's great, you've got the ones from 86 constantly going, "Cowabunga, where's the pizza?" And the ones from 2003 are like, "Are these guys serious?" But the comic keeps, I love the one comic that keeps getting made.
These guys are awesome.
I do like the belt buckles with your initials on them.
Like the new Michelangelo, the 2003.
He loves
He's
them.
Like, I love this.
I love these guys. These guys are awesome. Yeah. And they're kind of showing the differences in what the Turtles should have been and what the Turtles became. And how silly. I mean, you got Rocksteady and Bebop. You got Shredder, who's all silly, bumbling idiot, trying to find Shredder from the new universe so that they can team up. Turns out when he finds him, he pretty much dominates the shit out of the old one because he's like, you're an idiot. I love there's a scene where they go back into the 86 universe and they're talking about how cartoony it is. All people are walking down the street with, like, boom boxes and shit.
And all of a sudden, April Neil's
brilliant right there.
In need of help.
He's like, first we got to go save April. He's like, we save her at least once a day.
Giant pizza mutant.
Pizza mutant creature is attacking April just at random, just so it can happen. So are we going to spoil this? I don't think we should, even though I'm dying to. Let's just say something happens. I turned to my wife, who I was watching this with, and I said, "Oh, please, Lord, let them do this." And about 5 minutes later, they did it, and it was like, awesome.
Awesome.
The movie was cheesy fun, and I was enjoying it, but when that scene happened, I loved it. I went from enjoying this movie to just, I loved it. I recommend when it comes out in September, if you haven't seen it and you're a fan of the Turtles, yeah, any version of the Turtles from comic book to 80s cartoon to the most recent ones, I recommend watching it.
Yeah.
Because for those of you who were annoyed by the 80s versions, you'll be able to laugh and say, "Oh, wow, that's so true. They're making fun of that." And for those of you who loved it, you're going to be going, "Oh, it's them again, and I love it." And you'll see, just trust me, there's references to all kinds of stuff, and it's worth watching. I really enjoyed it. What'd you think, Stu? As eons.
I liked it a lot. I actually went into it thinking of something different, mm-hmm, than what you were saying, and then actually seeing that it started off with the 2003 Turtles, and then the 86 Turtles came in, like, not knowing anything of what happened. I mean, they didn't even know they were in another time.
Right, they didn't, yeah.
They knew something looked weird, but they weren't sure. And just the fact that, just the whole concept of, like, the multiverse is coming together, just, it's awesome actually seeing different generations.
And I like how, as the verses were getting destroyed, it was just more like the worlds were getting erased, like going black and white.
Yeah,
and
it went to, like,
architect
drawings to white and
to this gone.
To gone.
It was really cool. Yeah. I liked it. I recommend checking it out. It was a lot of fun. I watched it with my kids, so it's family friendly, but I think adults, especially around our age, who remember watching the Turtles and whatnot, they're really going to get into it. So
even if you didn't watch the movies, even if you read just the comic books.
Yeah.
And
stick it out through the movie.
Yeah,
because you'll be rewarded. That end scene was just brilliance.
Brilliance.
Pure brilliance. The final shot of the movie was just brilliance.
Yeah.
And I loved it. And I wish we'd have seen it before we did the episode we did in Obscure 80s, because it fits so beautifully. It was good. Yeah, it's a recommend from both of us. So there you go. Check out the Turtles Forever, coming out, I believe, in September. So there you go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Those about to rock.
Show me how to lie. You're getting better all the time and turning all against one. Is an art that's hard to teach. Another clever word sets off an unsuspecting hurt. And as you step back in the line, a mob jumps to their feet. Now dance, fucker, dance, man.
So we decided to do something a tad bit different, and we're actually going to start throwing this out every, what did we say, like every third week or so?
Yeah, we figured we'd take $100 bills and just throw it in the trash.
We're going to throw it out on the street, and the first person that gets it, gets it. However, we're going to throw it right in front of ourselves, and we're going to make sure nobody else is around.
Yep.
No, we decided that once a month, you know, you guys that are out there know we typically do newer music as our review, but we decided once a month we're going to go back into our personal type vault, as it were, and we're going to pull something out that we used to listen to.
And then throw it right back in.
That we used to listen to. See, this is what I put up with all the time. See how hard it is to talk about things with him here? You're quiet. You're easy. It's no problem.
Of course he's easy.
People don't even know you're here. You're just,
yeah, I don't know if I'm really here.
Well, I don't know if you're really here either. Let me see.
Oh.
You're there.
Pinch him.
Touch me.
We're going to go back in our own personal vault and bring out music that I'm going to say we used to listen to. Sometimes we still listen to it, but something that we were really big on in the day. We're going to bring it back out. We're going to review it, and we're going to discuss a few key points. One, what our thoughts were when we first heard it back then. Two, what our thoughts are on it now as compared to then. We're going to discuss whether we think it holds up today as well as it did then. And pretty much anything along those lines. So we decided to start off with a band that we have... I would say that if you and I had a band that is friends, you know, that connected us the most, this might be that band.
Yeah.
There are a lot of bands for us, but this might be that one. And so we're going to start off things with The Offspring's Smash. Man, this album, did we... Oh, crap. What year did it come out? Did we figure that out?
No, we didn't.
I probably looked it up at one point, and I guess I could do that real quick. Stu and I have always been fans of Offspring. Did you own every album? I think you finally went back
at one point
and got all their stuff. Smash was probably the first. No, it was definitely the first I heard of. This was actually their third studio album. They had two before this, but I was not aware of the albums. This was the one that I think really set them off. That everybody kind of noticed, you know, this was the one with all the hits on it, from Bad Habit to Self-Esteem. What is the song called Keep 'Em Separated? It is in, like, parentheses, isn't it? Isn't it called something else, Keep 'Em Separated?
Yeah. What?
I think I'm typing. I can't type and talk at the same time. I'm physically I'm physically incapable, so... These are the pieces I get to cut out all the time. I love it. It's a beautiful thing. Yeah, Smash was the third Offspring album. So, they had two before them. Didn't really listen to them. Came out in 1994. Same year we graduated high school. Just looked it up, by the way. Under Epitaph Records. Now, Offspring have been called a lot of things. They've been called just standard punk rock, which is where I would kind of go with them. I heard a term the other day that I kind of liked. Skater rock.
Yeah.
Or skater punk, I think it might have been. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
the album received, for I think probably one of the reasons that so many people knew of Smash is because it actually received some critical acclaim for these guys. It was actually the big one. What was it that drew you to this album, Steve? Do you remember the first time you heard this?
Believe it or not, okay, first time I ever heard or seen these guys was back in a long, long time ago.
Long, long time ago.
Back in the day when there was this station that used to play music videos.
What was that called?
I don't know. It's been so long.
Music video television. I wonder what they would call a station like that.
MTV.
Oh, that's back, a good name.
Back when...
It's too bad the MTV already has that name.
Yeah. Now they play reality shows. Yeah. Real World. The video caught my eye. I was just... if I remember correctly, I was just changing channels. And I knew MTV, so I watch it all the time. And... this video came on, and a lot of it was a negative picture. So, I mean, when you saw them, you actually saw them in the negative format. So, and he had that long braided hair, and he was, like, doing the whole rocking back and forth, you know, jamming, and just the whole high intensity of the song is basically what sold me on it, along with that video. It just, I thought it was awesome.
For me, by the way, it's Come Out and Play, not Keep Them Separate. Yeah. I knew it wasn't right.
Yeah.
I mean, to admit my whatever offspring ignorance, Come Out and Play was the first song I heard and recognized this group as somebody I like, these guys were awesome. Not too long after that, of course, Self-Esteem, which was one of those early kind of dark songs to be hitting the radio. Like it was... at the time, 1994, 1995, this is an edgy song to be hitting the radio. And, of course, you know, they cut a few things out of it. This album was actually originally released on vinyl, too, which is still pretty cool. So that ought to tell you a few things.
That tells me I need to go look.
Did you own cassette?
I own cassette and CD.
Right. Well, I know you own CD, but I'm saying, did you have a cassette of this before? Because this is still...
No, I believe I had CDs right off the bat with these guys.
Yeah, I did too. I don't think I ever had it on cassette. I definitely...
If I had the opportunity right now, I'd probably buy some cassettes.
Yeah, well...
I look all the time. So, I mean, if I see it, I will buy it.
So let's go through track listing. There are 14 tracks on this. The first track is called... It was actually not a full song. It was just like a musical intro. This album actually has a hidden track, too, right? This was the one with the hidden track that's also a musical piece.
Yeah,
at
that's
the end.
Actually it's on track 14, but it's like...
You have to wait?
It's like 10, it's like 5 minutes.
Like the song goes off and there's silence.
Yeah, for like 3-4 minutes.
And then there'll come in more music. But it's called Time to Relax. It's about a 30-second clip of music that intros the album. Which kind of became a thing for Offspring to have a sort of intro
and an outro.
For Americana, it's awesome. It's that I know the guy. Everybody knows the guy when they hear his voice, but he's this little nerdy dude who talks with this funky voice. You hear him all the time. That intros it and actually pops up throughout the CD to say little things, which is pretty clever. Then we've got Nitro. Which, out of this entire album, is probably that and track 10, which is we'll get to in a second, which is Killboy Powerhead, are the two that I'm least familiar with, the two that I don't listen to the most. Track 3 is Bad Habit. Stu and I, we have a rule about Bad Habit.
Do not listen to it while driving.
Bad Habit and driving equals road rage. It's a song about road rage. It's a song about shooting people who piss you off on the road.
It's not necessarily the fact of you get pissed off. It's like something just happens when you're listening
to that
song.
Me, it's just like so like the feel of it makes me want to drive like a maniac, like because it just gets you all excited and yeah, you know, fuck you.
And they have this one line that's got like all the cuss words in one.
Such attitude, man. I pull my piece. That is that what you're talking about?
They got that song.
It's oh shit! I can't think of how it goes. You drivers are such
stupid, goddamn motherfucker.
Shit, motherfucker. Yeah, something like that. Anyway.
I have to be listening to actually do work for Random.
But a fun song. Just high energy. The next one is a song I love off this album, which is Gotta Get Away. It is not uncommon for me.
And that was one of the singles off the album.
It's not uncommon for me to just be walking around and notice I'm humming or kind of under my breath singing Gotta Get Away. After that is Something to Believe In, or I'm sorry, Genocide, also a great track. All these are great tracks. Something to Believe In is after that. Do not get it confused with Poison. Not at all the same. Next is Come Out and Play, which I would venture to say was probably one of their biggest hits. That's the one with the You Gotta Keep Them Separated.
It's got the Mexican saying.
Uno, dos, tres, cuatro, cinco, cinco, seis. Yeah. After that is Self-Esteem. I love Self-Esteem. The story behind it, I think it's scary to know that I've been there. This song is essentially about a guy. He's with this girl who just treats him like shit, abuses the hell out of him, does whatever she wants to him,
and he still
but he just keeps coming right back. And he relates it in the song to basically... I know I should say no, but it's kind of hard when she's ready to go. You know, lines like, you know, I lost my nerve. I took her back and made her dessert. It's like, you know, it's kind of like, well, he's just using her for sex. But you don't really get that from the song. It's like he's telling himself that, like, it's okay. I'm getting laid, right? Almost like he's talking to his buddies and they're like, dude, you're an idiot. And he's like, hey, I'm getting laid. But you know he's really hung up on this girl so she can do whatever she wants to him and he'll let her do it. And it's a dark song, and I love it. It's just, yeah. after that, it'll be a long time. Then comes Kill Boy Powerhead, which is a cover song of some band called The Digits. I do not know them. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to admit my ignorance here. What Happened to You, So Alone, Not the One, and Smash, and that's the one where... There's a song, and then you wait, and there's a little hidden track at the end of Smash.
It sounds kind of like a pyramid-type sound to it, like an Egyptian-style sound. It's got the guitar, and I can't sing, so.
Yeah, we know. I'm reading this. This is offline. So it says the first track, Time to Relax, is not present on the cassette version and is a spoken intro to the entire album rather than a song. That's kind of interesting. I did not know that. Similar to The Offspring's next three albums, Ixnay on the Hombre, Americana, and Conspiracy of One, all three of which I owned. Amazingly enough, I owned... these in a weird order. I owned them backwards almost, except I had Americana, then Ixnay on the Hombre, then Smash, then Conspiracy of One. That's the way I bought them. I think I had maybe a single or something of a couple of the songs before I actually owned the CDs. This came out in 94, like I said, and that's the year we were graduating high school. I probably didn't really start listening to them until 95. In fact, I would say almost definitely, which is when I actually moved back and we actually started hanging out.
Yeah.
We knew each other in high school, but we didn't really start hanging out until about a year after high school. And it's just one of those weird things where I think this album just clicked with both of us. Where, you know, I don't remember you coming to me and go, hey, you have to check this out. I don't remember me ever going to you and saying that. I just think we were both listening. And I do kind of recall you going, yeah, dude, I'm really into this album. I remember this, weird as it is. I remember us driving down the road one day, and you're like, yeah, I really dig this album. And you put in, it was Smash, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm like, oh, dude, I love this. I even remember where we were. That's what's weird about it. We're on 747.
Scary.
It's one of those weird memories that sinks into your head. So we've always been sort of connected by this band. We've always been big fans. Still haven't got to see them in concert, though. It will happen.
They had the chance. We had the chance last year, but I had real bad chances with my job. So.
Well, they were sort of gone for a while, and then they came back with what's the name of the album? The one with Hammerhead or whatever on it. It's their most. They were gone for a long stretch. They hadn't done.
It's on the top of my head.
They hadn't done anything for a while.
Angels and.
Yeah, it's Rise and Fall.
Rise and Fall. Oh, shit.
Something Grace, right?
Is that Saving Grace?
Hold on. I will know in about 5 seconds if my computer cooperates. It's called Rise, and you know there are people out there going, oh,
Rage and Grace.
Rise and Fall, Rage and Grace. I didn't really listen to Splinter. That was the one that sort of was like, that was, out of all their albums, I would say that's the one that.
I had it.
Yeah, but we didn't really care for it that much. It wasn't bad, it just wasn't the rest of their stuff. But we're looking at, from Conspiracy of One, 2003 was Splinter, and then it was another 5 years before Rise and Fall, and we didn't really get into Splinter, so it was kind of like, 7 or 8 years before we really kind of.
You know what's funny? Smash came out in 94, and then Rise and Fall, Rage and Grace came out in 08. The time, those two, they sound so similar in their presence, like the way they make you feel and all the high energy and all the songs. It's such a similar feel.
Feels like one album.
Yeah.
I could see that, I guess. Yeah.
I mean, you could probably put the two on a double disc, and they, you know, all, it sounds like they just made it all at the same time.
Now, we, again, we have the questionable Mike here sitting in with us, and a little ill-prepared. He didn't know he was going to be doing this. he was just coming over, and I said, why don't you sit in with us? But, so we'll ask you, we'll talk to you for a second. First of all, are you an Offspring fan? Do you like Offspring?
Yeah, I like
them. I kind of knew that because we all sat here one day and watched a bunch of their videos together, the three of us, if you guys remember. Not that long ago. Do you remember this album?
Well, you know, not bad. Not the album title, but, you know.
A lot of the songs.
Yeah. It was just the songs, but.
This is probably their most popular album, followed by Americana, would be probably be their second. With the most hits off of it would be this. This one has the most hits off of it, from Self Esteem to Bad Habit to Come Out and Play and Got to Get Away and yeah. So overall, like, what do you think of the album?
Yeah, it's just, you know, just one of those that just, you know, grabbed my attention, and you know, you know. It's hard for me to even, you know, go into detail.
Well, I mean, knowing that you like it, but you're not, you wouldn't say you're a fan like we are. So it's probably, and I'm putting you a little on the spot. So it's not like you had time to, you didn't even know we were going to be talking about this until you got here. So Stu, initially when it came out, you loved it. And you still love it.
Yep.
But do you feel, and I'll ask both of you guys this. Do you feel that this album holds up? Could you still listen to it, you know, 10 plus years later that it is now, 15 years later almost? Do you still feel that it holds up as an album? Do you think it feels dated at all? Or could it be played today and still?
Absolutely not. Dated as far as they know. It's definitely not. I mean, I could listen to it. They could release it today, and it still sound as good, if not better, than some of the music they actually got coming out. Rise and Fall, Rage and Grace, like I said, they sound so similar, and they just came out in 08 with that.
Right.
So, I mean, they're not a dated band. Their sound just incorporates keeps getting better and better, and they don't try to sound like something else.
I agree with that.
But their sound is not like a sound that is put with a date on it. Because, I mean, you can't say, oh, that sounds so 90s, or right, that sounds so 80s. I mean, it's, I don't know. You just can't say that now.
From what you remember, sir, would you say that this album feels dated to you at all, or does it still hold up as an album?
You know, it will always hold up, regardless. I mean, the distinct sounds that
they have a very distinctive sound. He's got a very distinctive voice.
Dexter Holland himself just had his voice.
His voice
is
very fitting for what they do, and it's very, you're right, very distinctive. Very distinctive sound, very distinctive voice. That's probably why they're one of those bands. You know, when it comes to punk music, a lot of it sounds the same, which isn't bad. It's just the way it is. And that's why certain bands will suddenly pop out ahead because there's something about them that makes them stand out. And Offspring sound is definitely...
Yeah, I mean, you can listen to the radio like you know Offspring
instantly.
Song. Yeah,
from the guitar alone, and then like you said, when Dexter starts singing, it's like, wow. I mean, you know,
I will say this: Dexter, Offspring, Dexter, the Offspring themselves may not be a number one band, but they are throwing those hits out. But they might not be like the mainstream anymore. They do have some of their songs thrown on the radio still, but they hold their peace regardless, you know, like some of these bands that like hit it big so quickly, but
they
then
just
next
fade
thing
away.
You know, they're gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I could probably name a few right now.
Yeah, they're the thing that I like about the Offspring is unlike Green Day, who I still love. Who are very much like that, too. They didn't fade away either. But they softened their sound a lot from their early stuff, from Dookie and stuff like that. They're a lot more mellow now than they were then. And Offspring mellowed a little, but not like that. They have managed to keep their sound.
A lot of people
sound.
Say that Green Day have sold out.
I hate that
I know.
Line. That's a bullshit line to say. So, okay, Metallica sold out, and I'll tell you why. Because they quit caring about their fans and only give a shit about themselves. Green Day, to say that somebody, they sold out. All they what? They're selling their stuff. People like them, and they're making money, so they're a sellout.
This is exactly what they probably thought. It's like, this sound, it works. Let's try to improve it.
Or maybe that's just the way as they were. You know what? They're getting older. Maybe they just went that way. A lot of bands do that. It's not so much, you know. I don't feel like they went, well, what will mainstream like? I don't feel like that's what they did. I just feel like they're like, you know, we're older.
Do you honestly think the Ramones would have kept that sound if they were still together and all that today?
Maybe. But to say they're sellouts, I don't know. Do you think...
Yeah, would you call them a sellout?
Do you think if Joey Ramone would have got pissed off if his albums would have suddenly went platinum?
No.
No. Hell no. Joey Ramone would have been like, give me the check, motherfuckers, you know.
And he would probably be like, here's the website to download shit my for free.
There you go. So, you know, I don't like the term sellout. Yes, some people do sell out, but I will agree with both of you guys. I think Smash is one of those albums that could come out. We just went to the Warped Tour, and there would have been nothing out of place with those other bands there. In fact, if anything, they would have probably dominated most of the bands there 15-plus years later.
Them guys could be the headlining act at Warped Tour.
Yeah, I wish they would be. What's really funny is we talked about this on the phone. Americana came out in the 90s, and while I love it, I still love it, it is way more dated than Smash.
Americana, just 'cause some of their topics.
Some of the topics and the style of music went a little 90-ish for a minute. We talked about it. First of all, Pretty Fly for a White Guy was making fun of, air quotes, wiggers. Mm-hmm. That's what they were making fun of. They still exist,
but they're not as pointed out.
But it's not like it was then, right?
Yeah.
So maybe not hold up as well. People still love the song, though. It's hilarious. They're pointing at this guy saying, "What is with this dude?
He's trying to
ridiculous.
Be what he's not.
He's acting ridiculous." And it's dumb. And then you've got songs like "Get a Job" and whatnot. Great songs, fun songs. Definitely show their time a little bit because the style is a little different now.
Yeah, but if you look for the videos from the, when we watch them, you can just see the age progression.
Oh, yeah, you absolutely can when you're watching their videos and you can see. Yeah, I mean, but I still love Americana. I still think it's still worth listening to. I'm just saying it is definitely a little more dated. Smash. There may be a time in the future where this type of music is just not done, like where it will be like, wow, that sounds so. If you were to hear Smash today and didn't know who the Offspring were, if you were, say you're a 13, 14-year-old kid, you're into this type of music, I put on Smash for you, you'd probably be down with it. And then if I said, well, that's from 1994, you'd be like, what? Like, because it wouldn't, I don't think at any point would you
I
just
guarantee. I guarantee this. If I was to wait another 4 years, give that album to someone, and they loved it, and they told them it was 20.
You keep the name of the group out of
them. Yeah, and I tell them, what would you say that I told you that these guys are already 20, this album's already 20 years old? They'd be like, no way.
These guys are pushing their 40s.
They'd be like, no way. I mean, it holds up that thing.
I think I am going to be inclined to agree.
And as I've told you before, this is the first and probably the only album I've ever owned. I've loved the songs from front to back.
Yeah.
I don't think there's ever really been an album that actually...
There's definitely been some for me. But
loved every stinking song on the album. Even Crew.
Hysteria. Oh, come on. Dr. Feelgood.
Even Crew, there's a couple songs I'm not as about throughout every album.
Open Up and Say Ah.
Still, dude.
Really?
Yeah. I'm just saying.
Pump.
I don't really listen to Aerosmith that much.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
I bet there's a couple out there. We'll find them.
Like I said, it was the very first. I didn't say it. Well, I did say. I think it's pretty much the only album that I've ever really listened to front cover to cover. Awesome.
Well, I think we're pretty unanimous about it. If you haven't listened to them in a while or if you've never listened to them, go check out Offspring. Any album will work, but I would recommend starting with Smash. I think it's probably their best. Yeah. But Ixnay on the Hombre, Americana.
Their latest in 08. Rise and Fall, Rage and Grace. Like I said, sounds almost similar to almost...
Their first album, which is called Offspring, and Splinter are probably my least two favorites.
Yeah, I wasn't real big fan of those. I mean,
yeah.
They were okay.
They're ones to go listen to after you're a fan just to be a completist.
Yeah, I mean, they were okay.
Now, next week on the show, we're going to be talking about Buck Cherry's new CD, which came out this week, or last week as you're listening to this, which is going to be interesting. Stu's a little more of a Buck Cherry fan than I am. I don't hate them, so we'll see how I feel. I think there's like 18 tracks on it, so it's
well, it's a double disc.
So there's definitely going to be something I like.
It's a double disc, that's why.
And then we're going to do this vault thing every once in a while. We have some cool stuff coming up. I know you had mentioned wanting to talk about Garbage, which I am completely down with.
I was thinking about Britney Spears.
I'm not down with that. But I will pull out my Backstreet Boys for you.
Backstreet Boys.
No, but we are going to throw some out
back
there.
Back.
So,
all
as,
right.
So, you know, you guys feel free to write us or give us a call, 206-350-6229. Let us know if there's something you think we should kind of pull out from the past and talk about. Don't promise we'll do it, but we might. There's probably a good chance we will just to kind of do
and
it. So.
There's a possible chance I'll show up again.
You will be because you and I are going to have a segment starting here soon, and it's going to be kind of interesting, I think. So
very.
So, yeah, with that, we're going to go into our next segment. He never had a chance, and no one even knew it was really.
My name is Mario Johnston. I'm a tattoo artist over here in, or just outside of Cincinnati, Ohio. And I've been tattooing for just about 7 years now.
So we'll throw some questions your way, but that's a good place to start, I guess. How did you get started?
I started, I guess I got offered the position through a friend of mine who knew a tattoo artist who was local. And so he introduced me to the guy, says, you know, show me drawings and stuff. So I went, showed him all these drawings, and he pretty much offered me a job on the spot, like drawing flash for him here, like there at his shop. So I pretty much just started hanging out around the shop for a few weeks, and I think it wasn't really any more than a couple weeks that I had started hanging around a tattoo studio before I ended up becoming a tattooer and doing paying customers.
Now, did you actually have full intentions of becoming a tattoo artist?
You know, I didn't. I actually, before I met this guy, I had no intention of becoming a tattoo artist. You know, I've been drawing about as far back as I can possibly remember, but I had absolutely no idea that I was going to be a tattooer. I didn't want to be a tattooer. It wasn't really anything that I had planned on doing at all. So,
did you, like, when you said you were drawing when you were young?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Did you have like something when you were young that you really wanted to do with it, or was it just sort of a side thing?
Not really, man. I think it kind of ended up being a sequence of events kind of ended up leading me to become a tattoo artist full-time. Like, things just didn't really work out for me in high school. Like, I had to drop out, and, like, you know, my work was pretty bad. So I ended up dropping out of high school, working a dead-end job at a Yamaha dealership, and then all the art stuff just kind of went by the wayside. So I never really had any ideas as far as, like, what I was going to do with it or where I was going
to
take it.
That's always interesting to me, because when I was young, I wanted so bad to be able to draw. I wanted to be a cartoonist more than, like, anything else. I was just not any good at it. So.
Yeah, I think we all have those, though. I mean, like, you know, I've, like, always known for a while that I've been able to draw, but, you know, I see other people do certain things, and I'm like, man, I wish I could do that, you know?
Well, I know that you've been, how long has he been tattooing you now, Stu?
About 2 years now.
2 years?
Two, probably a little bit longer than that, I'm sure.
Two, maybe three.
Yeah, maybe three.
And I know some of the stuff that you've done, like, what you're working on the back piece for him, and the one...
The crew tattoo?
With the how would you describe it? Like, the portrait kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean,
Shot
I know...
Shot the devil.
There was some, like, you were like, should I do it or should I not do it? And it turned out really well, so...
There's a certain kind of level of difficulty when it comes to pieces like that. I think some of the other pieces are a little bit easier. Obviously, the girls script was a little bit easier. It's really just more of script, you know, we're used to doing that kind of stuff. The other album covers were definitely a little bit easier, but when you start getting into the other ones, you know, the Shout at the Devil and Too Fast for Love, they're a little bit more like photorealistic right. kind of style, you know, and the photorealistic portrait-esque type stuff tends to be a little bit harder to do, especially because I don't really have a whole lot of experience under my belt.
Turned out really well.
Thanks,
yeah,
man.
A lot of people are impressed by it.
Thank you.
I was, because Stu had told me, he's like, he was a little hesitant at first, like, and he's like, you know what, I'm going to give it, and he came and I was like, well, I don't know why he was hesitant. It looks
I told you eventually you're going to have to do it. So.
Yeah. Well, eventually.
Might as well practice on Stu.
The funny thing about it is, like, portraits, man, like, most people don't really want to do portraits any smaller than, you know, something that's right around almost like a CD kind of size, you know, like generally it has to be something that's right around the size of a CD or maybe a little bit bigger. And to do like four portraits, not just one, but like all four of them, and do them all like, you know, literally the size of like a half dollar is like, you know, who does that? It's crazy. So
the detail looks nice.
Yeah, it actually worked out pretty well. I mean, yeah, it is simplified a bit from you know, the original,
but
still
it gives it its own character. So.
Yeah, it's about as original as we can get with it. So.
So we'll ask some of the obvious questions just to get them out of the way. What's one of the best things you think you've got to tattoo?
Oh, man.
One of the coolest things, I guess.
Besides the crew tattoos.
Besides
all the crew tattoos, man, I don't know if anything's ever going to top that. But it's hard to say, man. I think every tattoo you do kind of brings its own little challenges and its own little kind of wins, if you will, when you finish it off. You know, you end up doing your tattoo and you kind of look it over and you're like, man, this looks great, or that looks great, and you just enjoy every small little detail about it. So it's hard to say, man. I think it's I was talking to someone about it the other day, and I think it's all in other people's perceptions of the tattoos more so than mine, because, you know, every time I talk to someone and they're like, man, I like this piece that you did, or I like that piece that you did. And they always pick out a completely different tattoo that is, in their mind, much better than the other one. But everybody is always picking out something different. Like, you know, one person will be like, man, that butterfly you did is amazing, or that King Tut piece is incredible, or whatever. And it's always something different. So it's more the eyes and everybody else than myself. But I have little things about almost everything I do that I like.
Have you ever done something that was just really off the wall obscure, and even you were like, why, wow.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, yeah. And normally, like, the most obscure and off the wall pieces end up I end up doing on tattoo artists and people who are in the industry, because, you know, we have skin that we pretty much are just trying to cover, and we don't really even care with, you know, what. It's pretty much just like, I have a space here, let's put something there. Let's make it happen. So
I've noticed, you know, Stu's getting the crew, like, album covers done on his back, but I've noticed, and I think it's really cool that you, while you're doing something that's already out there, you know, you're taking a piece of art that's already created and you're recreating it. I like how you change things up just a little to make, you know, to give that kind of originality.
Yeah, it's a lot of things. I if I change anything, I try to keep true to most of what we're what we're going for and most of what it is. But if I change anything at all, for the most part, it's really just because, you know, we have to make small, tiny, little, minute changes just to make them tattooable. Because not everything translates as well from paper or plastic or whatever onto skin. So we have to make tiny little changes just so a needle can make it happen instead of a pencil or a pen.
Now, I want to say, and I could be wrong here, so if I am, forgive me, but I want to say real early on when... Now, did you start when Lombardi was upstairs?
No, actually, well, that's the thing. I came to Lombardi City just a little over four and a half years ago.
Okay.
That was when I moved to the U.S., and I've been working at Lombardi ever since. But I know that they were upstairs, but they've been that shop's been around for longer than I've been tattooing overall.
Yeah, it's been there for it's.
My first tattoo was when they were upstairs.
Yeah, it's like 11 or 12 years now.
And I actually got tattooed by the owner at one time, Chris
Bainey.
Yeah, he actually did one for free.
Yeah, because
he was
apprenticing.
I was a guinea pig for him. Which will be redone at one time.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Years ago. So,
what were your influences coming into tattooing? Like, do you have anyone that you look
or your art just
upward, like, look at as far as?
Well, coming into tattooing, I had no influences whatsoever. Like when I first started, the shop that I was working at, we were very much more of a street shop. You know, we tattooed anybody who made it into the door and whatever they picked off the walls and the occasional piece we'd draw. But for the most part, to be honest, we did a lot more flash and kind of street shop type stuff than really being creative. And I think being on the island kind of made it so that we didn't really have a whole lot of resources either.
Being Bermuda.
Yeah, being back in
Which
Bermuda.
Is where you're from?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, and we didn't really have a whole lot of resources as far as things. I mean, like, you know, there, of course we had the internet and everything, but it was just that, like, tattooing wasn't, you know, 7 years ago, it wasn't really as big. There weren't as many artists who are really well-known who were getting out there. The magazines, like, most of the work that was being featured in the magazines was just kind of mediocre at best. So we didn't really have very many, like, major influences, and we weren't really exposed to it. You know, back on the island, there were probably, like, two studios at the time, whereas us and one other shop. So we didn't really have, like, a big following or surrounding. So I had really no influences. It wasn't really until I moved out here to the U.S. that I started getting tattooed by good artists, started going to conventions, and I started learning more about it. And I was like, man, you know, there's so many good artists, like, floating around out here, and that was when I started to learn, you know, who's who and who to be influenced by.
It's interesting because I think, like you said, 7 years ago, it was a different world for tattoo artists. And
it was, man. Like, it seems like every 10 years, like, from what I've been learning or from the people I've been talking to and from what I've seen, it seems like every 10 years or so, tattooing tends to go through this little kind of a renaissance where things start to change, and what's popular in this decade is going to be completely out the next decade, and this whole new wave of artists tends to move in, and you know, the fads and the trends change, and, like, just the overall style, like, every 10 years or so tends to just completely pack up and, you know, move on.
It's also become a lot more socially acceptable. I mean, back, you know, when my parents were young and stuff, only certain types of people got tattoos.
Yeah.
The rough and tough had tattoos.
Yeah.
Now you're hard-pressed to find somebody who doesn't have at least one.
Yeah, actually, so a statistic recently, they're talking about how apparently it's like roughly like 20% of Americans, like 18 to like 50 or 60-something, whatever, are tattooed now, or have had at least like one form of tattoo.
I think I know a few that are under 18 that have.
Oh yeah, yeah, oh, yeah. There's definitely under 18s, but I think
and now that parents can sign in for their children, they can actually get tattooed at like 16, 15 years old now.
Yeah, it's a pretty big number now. You know, before it used to be like, oh yeah, these are reserved for bikers and gangsters.
Yeah,
but now it's like, you know, you're talking like, you know, 15% of Americans or whatever. It's a huge number.
I've seen some of the older ladies getting tattooed sometimes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We get all types, man. I think the oldest person I ever tattooed was 80... It was either 82 or 83.
Wow.
I think. But he was... he got it... And it wasn't his first one. He'd been tattooed. And the funny thing is, where I tattooed him on his arm was right next to another tattoo that he had done about a week earlier.
Hmm. so he's a... He hits him up every week.
Yeah. He wasn't really one to get tattooed like in his younger days. It looked like he was just kind of, you know, he knew he was getting up there, and if he was going to do some of these things, and he had to do them now or not do them at all. So he ended up getting one from one shop, and then he came to us and got something else done a little bit later on. So,
you find most people know what they want when they come to the door, or most people just know they kind of have a vague idea of what they want?
I think it's about 50-50. I think we probably have, you know, as many people who come in and they've kind of seeked us out, or they looked at portfolios and they know exactly what they want, and they have it in their minds what it's going to be, what it's going to look like. As much as we get the people who just are like, oh, I want to get a tattoo and I'm in the area, let's see what you got. You know, and they end up walking out with something that they had no idea was going to happen. So I don't have anything against it. I mean, I personally, I've done both. You know, I've been tattooed and I've come in with an idea like, yeah, let's do this. And then other times,
totally different.
Oh yeah, other times I'll show up at a friend of mine's shop or something like that and, you know, go to a convention and just be like, hey, I'm going to get tattooed. Who's got time? You know, and just go with it.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen, you know, Stu's coming with drawings and he's come back out and he said, well, he had this idea. And I'm like, man, that looks so much better. And I think it's because, you know, in our opinion anyway, you guys are artists, you know, first and foremost. So people kind of sometimes have a, you know I want this, but you can say, well, what if I try this?
Yeah.
And you guys have a vision that I don't think everybody has, which I think.
As the way I've always looked at it is like, you're putting on the skin, you know what would look good and whatnot, and you have to represent for that. For as long as I live, so
yeah.
You know you want to do a good job. So
yeah, but it does take time to figure out. I mean, like when we all start out, even tattooers, and I think like the people who don't ever become tattooers, we all kind of start with the same kind of mindset. You know, when you're a young tattooist and you've just kind of started, you jump into it like, oh yeah, whatever I want to do is going to work on skin. That's how it goes. But then as you get older and as you, you know, grow into it a little bit more, you start to realize that not everything works out so well just taking it and sticking it on.
Yeah.
So you learn what composition is, you learn a little bit more about flow, you learn about, you know, what it's going to take to make a piece look good on skin and what, you know, a tattoo should look like on the body. But it takes a while. It takes a few years.
Have you ever had somebody that was just mad afterwards?
You know, man, we got to talking about that shop recently. I have had that happen, not on very many occasions. I think offhand I can probably think of two, maybe in my entire career, where somebody was just not thrilled. You know, no matter what I tried, it just didn't work out. And you know, I try like, well, what if we do this or what if we do that, and they were just not happy. But it comes with the territory, you know. I mean, it's all
sure.
Learning things.
You're always
so.
Gonna run into those people.
Yeah, yeah, you definitely run into those people. So I've been pretty fortunate lately. Most of the people who come looking for me are, you know, they know my style and they've like kind of like looked for me for the most part, and so they're a little bit more accepting of what I'm about to do to them. They kind of let
you
me do my own thing for the most part.
Loyalty with repeat customers too.
Oh yeah,
actually kind of fell into your hands, I guess you'd say.
Yeah,
because I just set up an appointment with you not knowing anything from your background, so
yeah.
But it ended up being a good thing.
Yeah. Oh, it happens, man. I get pretty much all types. There's no real set rhyme or reason to it. I even have the people who just, you know, come into a walk-in, or they just, you know, happen to like have a cancellation with somebody else and I might have time. But, you know, we're all like that. All tattooers are like that. You never know who's gonna be next in your chair.
Do you have like techniques or like the type of, say, guns you use that like specifically you only
machines?
Like to use, like, is there like
you have a preference?
I know, like,
and, like, I've used this, I've used that, this,
yeah, it's
seems
like
to work best.
Professional pool players have a certain stick they like to use,
but that's the thing. And just like, you know, professional pool players or athletes or whatever, you know, whatever works for me may not work for the next guy. So
right.
I mean, I can't really say like, oh yeah, I'm an advocate for these people because they're the best. I mean, I know that this stuff that I use for the most part works for me. But I can't really promise that, you know,
so
this is amazing.
Different.
Yeah, everyone is going to be completely different. I mean, for the most part, you know, very few times you see machines that run alike, you know, especially if they've been tinkered with. Tattooers are notorious for not being able to leave stuff.
Yeah, I do remember
alone.
You saying you had to tinker with yours a few times.
Yeah, we will not leave a machine alone, man. I know very few tattooers who will just buy a machine and just leave it alone. We tend to tinker with all sorts of stuff.
Why is that? You want a faster speed, or you want...
Yeah, and everybody, because everybody tattoos different, so everybody needs slightly different machinery, you know. Some people prefer a machine that, you know, might, you know, they can try to squeeze every little ounce of smoothness out of it. They'll try to make it run a little bit smoother than it did when they first got it, or it needs to run a little bit faster, or, you know, if they want a shader, they want something that runs a little bit slower, or something that hits a little harder. So there's you know, constant just unbelievable amounts of adjustability in these machines. And depending on the artist's style and how they like to work, or how they, you know, kind of handle the skin, they all want something a little different out of their tools.
Now, do you, just like any art form, you know, people work in different styles. Do you have a preferred style of tats that you do? I know you've tried some different stuff on Stu, like the dot stuff, which I think looks pretty cool.
That and traditional.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have a preferred style? But do you have something that you really like to
specialize in?
I think I'm a little bit too... I don't know if I'm really, like, far enough into tattooing. I mean, like I said, I've only been at it for about 7 years, which seems like it's a long time, but, you know, we tattooers don't really have much of an expiration date. We pretty much just go until we can't anymore for the most part. So I'm in that respect, I'm still kind of young in this, so I can't really say that I have a specialty yet.
Okay, do you have a favorite that you like doing the most?
Not really. I think, you know, I love doing black and gray as much as color, you know, and dot work and tribal and all that kind of stuff.
You like a variety of different styles.
I like to think that I'm pretty versed, but I will say this. I definitely have way more people come to me for brightly colored, like full all-out color stuff than black and gray or tribal. I mean, I like doing anything. You know, if you're letting me work on you, I'm good.
Yeah, I got both from you, so
it looks good. Do you think that's just because people come for that stuff or because they've seen your work and come because they like what you do?
I think the color has started to become more of my reputation. I mean, like I said, I'm no specialist in it by any means, but I think that's become more of my reputation. That's what people are starting to recognize my work for. You know, I've been fortunate enough to have a lot of work featured in magazines and in different places and stuff. And most of the time, like almost 90% of the time when they put it in, it's always something...
bright colored,
you know, brightly colored. And,
yeah, I did notice that one of your magazine articles had the Ghostbusters theme.
Yeah,
that's pretty.
Yeah.
So that it was really the colors were like popping out.
Yeah, I think they featured a bunch of pictures in there, man. It was like a 10-page spread, and I think there were probably only two, maybe three black and gray pieces in there. Everything was just color, and that wasn't my choice. I sent them out a pretty balanced. I gave them a pretty balanced kind of spread of everything that I did, and they just kind of picked and choose. They were like, oh, yeah, the color is what we're going to run. And then every single time something shows up, it's always the color stuff. And I think that's what people like to see from me the most, I believe.
I'm really impressed with, like, I was looking at Stu's arm of the controller, the Nintendo, the detail work.
Mm-hmm.
I think you do some really nice, like, the word Nintendo it looks like a Nintendo controller.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Thanks.
So your detail work is what I've always, when he showed me, you know, his tats that he's got from you, I've always been like, man, the detail on this stuff is just great. So
yeah, thanks, man.
I think that's some of the most impressive stuff to me. And
thanks a lot. No, I love a challenge. You know, I love, the good thing is that, like, Stu constantly brings me different ideas to work with. You know, I'm constantly, like, if it's not the Motley Crue stuff, it's like, oh, I want a Nintendo controller, but we're going to do this, like, photorealistic one. And then the other controller, like, the little joysticks, all, like, old, like, new school and or kind of traditional.
Well, actually, I gave you a picture of an actual controller, and you asked if you could do something to it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's when you came up with the...
But, I mean, you let me. You let me, which is great, you know, just being able, like, you let me kind of do these different things, because if you were just like, oh, you come in, and I want it exactly the way it is, you can't change it at all, and I'd be like, oh, it's kind of boring. So at least we get to
like,
do things
like
a little different.
Flair, you know, like something that's different.
Makes it original. A little originality.
Oh, yeah.
I've done the mistake of doing some flash art before.
I think we all have.
I mean, there's at least a couple other people out there that's had it. But I like to try to keep it as much as original as I can.
Yeah. Well, I think we all have those,
there's
man.
A point where you, like, say you really like something, can you just touch on it a little bit differently?
Yeah. No, I think we've all done that, man, especially as a tattooer. I mean, you know, most tattooers have tons of tattoos. We're covered more than most people. And I was on the internet the other day, and I was actually on a forum, and I saw somebody post up a picture of their tattoo. And the exact same tattoo that he had on his back, it's like this big, crazy back piece I have as a chest piece. And I was like, oh, man, that's crazy. You know, everything was the same, except his artist had tried to add some things, quote, unquote, add some things.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, kind of make it his own. But, you know, I was looking at it, I was like, wow, that is definitely, like, my chest piece. So, you know, it happens. I mean, you go through that stuff. But then as long as you get some original stuff to balance it out, then you're good.
I like what you were saying when we were in the shop earlier when you were just talking about, you know, we were talking about the piercer, but you basically said sometimes you just get bored. And so you're like, let's pierce something.
You saw him. You saw him. He was doing nothing, man. He was, like, just sitting there, like,
yeah,
oh,
playing
we're just
on his laptop.
Yeah. I mean, it's not always the case for
right,
him. Like,
right.
You know, it's not always the case for anybody.
Well, we're talking, this is a Thursday night at
Yeah, it's like the end of Tuesday, the night. Things are really slowed down. You know, people generally during the week don't tend to show up like this late at night to start anything. You know, they don't want to get a piercing this late or start a tattoo this late. So, you know, a lot of times that happens, they'll just be sitting around, or even tattooers will just be sitting around the end of the night, be like, man, I'm bored. Who wants to get tattooed? Let's do something weird, you know?
So what you're saying is we need to start hanging out at the shop when you guys are closing, because we
could get some weird tattoos, get some strange tattoos, see some strange tattoos. You never know.
That's crazy. So you go a lot of places, conventions and whatnot.
Yep.
Have you met any really cool people, like,
you know, it's the most of the people that I do meet are tattooers, because, you know, doing a lot of tattoo conventions, there aren't that many celebrities who tend to show up at tattoo conventions. Very few athletes ever. I mean, a few actors here and there. I mean, like, if you went to the Mario Barf show in Vegas, you'd probably see Sylvester Stallone, because he's been tattooed by Mike DeVries. You might see, you know, like Ice-T or somebody like that. You might see some celebrities who show up from time to time. And of course, like the West Coast shows, you'll see a lot of like West Coast type celebrities there and stuff. So, Nikki Sixx, of course, was a lot of fun. That was a fun little highlight of the California show. But overall, I mean, I meet way more tattooers than I do like celebrities. And I think in our industry, like, our tattooers are the ones who are like the celebrities to us. You know, like, we meet a lot of tattooers, sure, and we're like, man, these, you know, this, it's so and so, like, I love this guy's work, you know. And
yeah, and I know you talk a lot about Corey up in Halifax.
Yeah, actually he's up in Toronto, and Corey has been a really good friend of mine. I over the last like 6 years since I met him, his work, you know, I saw his work first in magazines before I even went to this convention in Jersey. And when I met him, he was just kind of not really doing much. He was hanging out at the show, and he was tattooing that weekend, but he didn't have an appointment. And I was like, hey, man, your work's amazing, you know? And it's kind of like meeting your idol a little bit.
Right, yeah.
And so I met him and, you know, got tattooed by him, and next thing you know, we became good friends. But I've always looked up to his work. Like, even now that we've still been friends for a long time, I still see his work in magazines. I'm like, man, I want to be like that guy, you know? I mean, I still look at it like, this dude is a celebrity in my mind and as far as this industry.
It's kind of cool because what you just said sort of hits on why we kind of go out of our way to talk to people that are in different industries and stuff, because we started looking at it like that. Like, you know, people, oh yeah, they see people on TV or movie stars or famous musicians, and they're kind of enamored with those people. But I'm like, there's this whole other group of people that have different idols, that see the world like different art forms, and that's kind of what, you know, recently... We, like you said, we interviewed a martial artist, and back when I was younger, I was real heavy into martial arts. Like, I loved it. I used to study. I used to read.
Yeah.
And there's this man that's extremely famous. His name's Dan Inosanto, and any martial artist that's a real martial artist knows who he is.
Yeah.
But to anybody else, you know, well, we were in a place one day, and he walked in, and we were like, whoa, you know, we were starstruck.
Yeah.
But if Stu would have been there at the time, because now he knows who he is, but back then he would have been like, what? What's the big deal? And I think that's really cool to try to, that's what we kind of try to do, to like show other people, look, there's this whole other world out there.
Yeah, it is, man. It is. Like, I spoke to one person before. They were looking through a magazine, and like, they saw this old guy. He's there. He's wearing a yellow jacket. He's got this really crazy high pompadour. And they're like, God, look at that weird old guy. I'm like, you know, you have any idea who that is? Like, that guy is a legend. You know, he's been tattooing longer than probably anybody else on this earth, probably. Like, this dude's, you know, a living, walking fossil of tattooing. You know, it's amazing. And, like, they just kind of just see a weird guy in a black shirt and a yellow jacket. And I'm like, man, that's Philadelphia Eddie, you know? He's amazing. But people don't really see that so much.
I think it's almost, again, it seems to be changing a lot, but I think there was always this stigma attached, and, like, people didn't realize, like, I was a tattoo artist. Right, but he's an artist. I mean, I've never met a good tattoo artist that couldn't sit down and draw or paint. But I think people forget that.
It goes, you know, kind of both ways. Like, there is still, like, a pretty heavy stigma attached to tattooing for the most part, and it is starting to change a bit over time. Like, it's over the last, like, few years that I've been in it, I've started to notice, like, a real slight transition, which is good. But, I mean, at the same time, you know, you have the artists out there, you have the guys who are doing, like, the real, real high-end, ultra-hyper-realism type stuff, who are, like, just at the absolute top of their game. You have, like, the Bob Terrells, and Nico Hurtado, and Mike DeVries, and all these guys. And at the same time, on the opposite end of the spectrum, you still have the little street shop guys who are still down the road, and they're still kind of giving tattooers a bad reputation by doing absolute crap tattoos and trading work for like pills and drugs and stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the reputation that a lot of tattooers have had for a while, you know, these like complete scumbags. And they do exist, but over time, sure, we're trying to change that. We're trying to like show people, it's like, look, this is art, you know. If you look long enough, you will see some stuff that will blow your mind and you did not think was possible with needles. So I see stuff every other day on the internet and in magazines. I'm like, how is that even possible? Like, I'm a tattooer, and I'm sitting there like, this is not possible. How are you doing
this? You find yourself just, no, I got to try that.
Yeah. Oh, no. From time to time, we definitely get that. Because,
how do I do that?
You know, there is no progression without trying to push yourself a little bit.
That's when you call Stu, like, hey, man, you...
Yeah, I have an idea. Stu,
you gotta schedule something soon. I want to try something on you. And you know, he's like, okay.
I'm always down.
As long as it's got something to do with Motley Crue.
Oh, yeah. his dream one day is to get their signatures, their autographs tattooed on them.
I'd be like, stop what you're doing.
Yeah, you gotta save some space for that.
It's like, I gotta come
back. I don't care if the whole back's done. It's getting rode over somewhere.
I haven't showered in 3 days, dude. I gotta get down there.
You gotta make that happen. I would love to see that happen for you, man, because, like, as big of a fan as you are, like, I would love to see, like, you know, you be able to get, like, all that stuff, so.
I don't know. I have a funny feeling that I'd probably do something stupid or...
I wouldn't let you. As long as I'm there, I'll
be like one of those little girls when, like, the monkeys come by, like, start crying.
No, that's so crazy. It just kind of makes me wish that, like, when I actually did meet Nikki, like, that I'd actually spent more time with you, because, you know, had I known you a little better then, you know, I probably would have been like, oh, man.
I didn't meet you until after the fact, didn't I?
Huh?
I didn't meet you until after the fact.
No, I think we were right around starting, because that was it was early 2008 when that happened. So we were probably
Motley Crue stuff, though.
No, we might have just been starting. Motley Crue,
that was your start. That
was the first one.
Was it?
Yeah, but okay. We might have just been kind of starting. We might have just been right around. Yeah, I think we were probably just starting. So, you know.
Yeah, you said, like, oh, I got a picture of so and so with Nikki Sixx.
Yeah. We were just kind of starting. So, yeah, had I known. But, man, I mean, if you think about it, had I known you better then, like, oh, my God, I would have been like, oh, you got to see this guy's work. And I actually would have had, like, stuff in my portfolio, because I have the Too Fast for Love one in my portfolio and on the website.
Yeah, we've actually seen it. Was that the one we've seen? There's the one that's online featured on that
one.
Well,
I know he's got Theater of Pain in his little digital frame. I don't know. I don't think I've seen... the comparison photo, I think.
Maybe that's what it is.
You
showed me something online. You were like, you got to go check this out.
Oh, you sent me Chronological Crew.
Is that what it was?
It's where I sent
yeah,
my
yeah,
pictures.
That's right. I remember that.
You had me go check that out.
I'm hoping one day, maybe.
Oh, we show him.
Nick, you're Tommy actually seeing that.
I've told Stu he's walking around with, and he's starting to realize this, like, you were walking around with something on your back that makes people know, like, they will remember you. Like, for example, he'll go to concerts or something, and there'll be a band there, and I'll be like, well, did you talk to him? Maybe we can get him on the show. I didn't think about it, and I'm like, well, you did talk to him. Yeah, well, maybe we can contact him. Will they remember you? I don't know. Did you show him your tats? No, I'm like, always show him. Hi, I'm the guy with the crew tat. Oh, yeah. I'm like, they will know who you are instantly.
No, that's funny, man. And if you went and started doing the convention kind of a circuit, too, you know, and I think those guys, they show up at shows. I know that Tommy does. I know that Tommy goes to tattoo conventions.
Well, I know. I want to hit Hell City eventually. Last year, I tried to, but ended up getting a flat tire.
But if you do start doing the shows and start going to conventions, then over time, then you do, like, among the convention circuit, you do become, you know, known as, like, oh, that's that guy with that thing. Because there's lots of guys like that. I've been to literally dozens of conventions, and every time I go, I'll see somebody who I'm like, hey, look, you know, there's that dude. And without even having his clothes off, he might have, like, a great big ridiculous back piece. You'll recognize him and be like, oh, that's that guy with that crazy back piece, you know?
All right.
I know, I've been dubbed Motley Stu now.
It's true.
He is Motley Stu.
It's Motley Stu. I think Mark said that when you showed up. He was like, Motley Stu's here for his appointment. I'm like, oh, yeah, sweet.
And I wasn't even the one that thought that either.
That's pretty crazy.
It just made sense.
Well, it does. The best I've heard, you know, is Stu Diamond Phillips, because his name is Stu Diamond. I thought that was great. And I give him so many nicknames, and I didn't think that one up. I've given you so many nicknames over the years, it's not even funny. But,
I don't know.
So, you have anything else
Not that I can think of at the moment.
Well, then we'll do what we typically do. We try to give everybody a few minutes. If there's anything you think people should know that they don't know, or
yeah, like any websites or
websites where they can look at some of your work, if they're going to be in the area, how they can get a hold of you if they want to.
Yeah, I mean, I think you guys probably got the. You guys might have the link already.
We do.
But it's pretty simple. It's literally just Mario or www.mariotattoos.com. That's all. Just MarioTattoos, all one word, .com.
You got lucky with that.
I know. Actually, I had somebody said that to me about 2 days ago. They were like, "Man, how did you secure that?" And I was like, "I have no idea." But it's like the most memorable thing. It's like, "Who's your tattooer? Mario. What does he do? Tattoos. All right, MarioTattoos.com." And it's like so easy to remember. So it's lucked out.
It's funny because when I went to Link the other day, we have a little section on our page that says people we've talked to, people we're going to talk to, and I have the names, and I like to make those names links. So I was like, well, I got a link to Mario, and I'm like, I don't remember what it was. So I Googled it, and I'm like, are you kidding? So I actually went there to look just to make sure that was you.
It was too easy.
It is. It's very simple. MarioTattoos.com.
Yeah. Somebody else couldn't believe it. They were like, how did you manage to get that? Like,
and we're just north of Cincinnati over in Fairfield. So if you're in the area and you're looking to get a tattoo.
Yeah, definitely hit me up.
Body City, Fairfield, Ohio.
Oh, yeah, Stu sure. Pretty much swears by. And how many do you have now?
I can't even remember now.
Yeah. I work mostly appointment only. You know, if anybody wants to get something done, I'm down to do pretty much whatever. You know, just any, the stranger the better. You bring me an odd idea, I'm all for it. You know, I love doing weird tattoos, but, you know, generally work by appointment only, but definitely get a hold of me. You never know, you know.
Might slip you in.
Hey, if it's weird enough, you know, bring me a strange enough idea. It's like, man, let's get that done today. Let's do it right now.
1, 2, 3, 4.
The segment that was not on the show last week,
whatever.
It's because we've had some jam-packed shows, but we're just going to BS for about 5 or 6 minutes here on whatever this week. Coming up in the near future, do you want to get in depth, or do you?
No.
Do you just want to talk about it for a few minutes?
Briefly.
Stu got to go see a show last night, so why don't you go ahead and BS about that for a few seconds before I talk about some of the things we're going to be talking about.
Last night, August 7th, 2010. I got to see Bret Michaels live here in Franklin, Ohio, at JD Legends Volleyball Sand Court. I guess you want to call
same
it
same place he saw Blues Travelers.
Blues Travelers. First, I think it was the first sold out show at JD Legends. I think.
How'd that go? Because you were worried about it being.
It was packed, but it wasn't as bad as I thought.
Okay.
We were up pretty close. It was awesome. There was a moment where they had to stop the concert because a really healthy woman, I guess, passed out. So Brett was like, get her up first, then we'll progress, which I thought was extremely cool.
Yeah.
But the first words out of his mouth were, is she diabetic? I'm like, oh, crap. Happens to be a diabetic bus right outside the.
Yeah.
I'm like, really? You're promoting that now?
Well, isn't he diabetic?
Yeah, he is diabetic.
So, yeah.
I mean, but it's just funny that the fact that he says that that's the first words that come out of his mouth. I mean, we know, Brett, you're diabetic. You know, we've known.
Well, he's Brett. He's a little self indulgent.
But, I mean, other than that, the show was awesome. I mean,
a lot of Poison, some cover, or yeah. Some originals. Or not originals, but. He's doing the Vince Neil thing. He's doing a cover album, right?
For the most part. I've heard a lot of bad things about his album.
Well, Poison did a cover album before, and it wasn't very good.
Yeah, they shouldn't do that anymore.
No, I agree.
They did a cover of Home Sweet Alabama. Or
Sweet Home Alabama.
Sweet Home, whatever.
Either
Knocking on Heaven's Door.
Not a song I'm... Because not everybody has done.
They did a couple others. I can't remember the names. I didn't even bother.
But overall, you enjoyed yourself.
It was not bad. It was not a bad show. It's a lot different when you can actually.
You got to go
see
for free
him
too,
close.
Right? Did you pay or did you?
I actually paid for.
Okay,
this.
I wasn't sure.
It's just way different when you can actually see them close. So.
Yeah.
And then next week...
You could tell that it was a wig.
Actually, no, you couldn't.
I'm just kidding. I don't think it is.
And then next week, I got Paramore coming up.
Which would be cool. I wish I could go to that one.
Well, I'm trying to see if I can get tickets on that one. Yeah, so
let me know. That'd be cool.
But I'll let you know more in depth on next week's show about Bret Michaels and also on Paramore as well.
Upcoming stuff. We got more interviews coming up. There'll be one next week as well. Hope you enjoyed this week with Mario. He's a really cool guy. And just an interesting topic because when we started talking about tattoos as an art form, like we mentioned in the interview, I just think a lot of people overlook that. Don't consider that fact that these guys are actually artists. And in some ways, a lot more intense artists. So.
I can honestly say, we didn't actually specify this in the interview, I can honestly say that if you had a contest between me and him on tattooing, even on drawing, he'd be the guy that stands up on top, because I can't draw.
Right.
As much as I love it, I can't draw. So there's a lot of intense talent behind all that.
I'm losing the comparison there because I think it's obvious you have no artistic.
Well, just a lot of people say, "Oh,
so to compare him to you isn't a good thing to me." But
well, a lot of people say, "Oh, that just follow a line."
It's not. Well, he doesn't, but he draws the lines.
No.
Mario draws the lines on you first, and yes, he does follow them after he draws.
Well,
them.
He does do a stencil.
Some people, a lot of them do.
On my,
but guess who typically draws the stencil?
Yeah. What I'm saying is, on this
one... Well, yours are a little different.
On this one, I already had set architectural work that all he had to do was kind of go off of it.
But he did... But he added, too.
But if it was a bare
canvas... And sometimes, we should have brought this up, sometimes they'll tell you, that's more difficult to fix what somebody else has done wrong.
Yeah.
Is more difficult. But I hope you enjoyed the interview, and I hope we gave you a little insight. Mario's a really cool guy. Check out his website. You can go there, and he's got a shit ton of his tats up there to look at. I was looking at it today when I was linking some stuff.
Yeah, if you want to see some of his work, like what he's done on mine, he's done
MarioTattoos.com.
He's done the entire crew tattoo on my back. Yep. And he's starting to work on my older ones.
I do still have a take one for the team that I will get around. You know, those are just going to be one of those things that we do every couple weeks when we just get really busy. So I did go see Inception. I'm not going to get in depth on it. I really enjoyed it. Everybody's been talking about it. Pretty much what they've been saying is on the nose. But I just wanted to say that I agree. It's a really good movie. Very deep. Got to pay attention. But I enjoyed it. We want to thank Questionable One for actually making it this week and sitting in. He and I will have a segment starting, I don't know, probably within the next week or so.
Yeah.
We're going to do from time to time. He's a big jazz and blues fan, and I like it, but I don't know anything
about
it.
Wow, you like basketball and hockey?
Yes.
Yeah.
Jazz
yeah.
and blue.
He's Utah nice. Jazz, blues.
Yeah, basketball, hockey.
We are, I like jazz and blues both, but I don't know a lot. So he's going to educate me. He's going to bring in every couple weeks a different album for me to check out. I'm going to listen to it. I'm going to give my opinions as a novice. And then he's going to tell me a little more about the singer and the album. And
you should listen to a album that's blues influenced. Travis Tritt.
As far as country music goes,
he's blues.
I will give you some of his stuff, not all.
His singing is not blues. His guitar playing.
Some of his music
blues.
Is definitely blues inspired. Yes, I will agree. As far as country music goes, Travis Tritt is amongst one of the ones I can handle. So, yeah. Not all of it. T R O U B L E is a little hokey at times, but
yeah. Well, who doesn't have a hokey?
They all do, right? That's sort of that's country music.
Breaky,
no, not even country. Any kind of.
But I think that's about all we got for you this week. Hope you enjoyed the interviews. You can check us out at Metal X Radio, metalxradio.com on Tuesday nights at 7 o'clock. We were played there. You can write us at Wrecking Crew, that's CRUE, radio@gmail.com. You can, of course, find out more about us and get links to all the people we talk to and whatnot. Check out some photo albums and everything over at pennycult.com. Just click on Wrecking Crew. We are on Facebook, I think, now, Wrecking Crew. Stu maintains that more than I do. We do still have MySpace. If you have a band or something you want to contact us, you can email us. You can contact us through Facebook or MySpace. We would love to talk to you about your band. And that's all I have.
I did want to add one thing on the Facebook. We do, like we said, we
thank
have
you, everybody. Good night.
All right.
Yeah. I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
I can't friend request anyone.
Yeah.
So you actually have to search for us and
click like.
Yeah, you got to click like. It used to become a fan, but now you have to click like. I don't know what the whole difference is. But I can't advertise, and I can't, like, well, I can advertise, but I got
to
pay for it.
Yeah, you're welcome to friend me on Facebook. It's JM2M2T's, and I always post when the new episode is up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're just in the show and you don't really give a crap about me, but you want to find that stuff out. Yeah, you know, I'm not a Facebook whore. I'm not up there all the time. I only post a couple of messages a week, and they're typically things like, hey, I'm falling asleep at work. Hey, by the way, the new Wrecking Crew is up.
And we're Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
And we are now the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, except we lack our Michelangelo. And that is in reference to the Reed Academy of Martial Arts, which we are now attending. And it's me, Stu, our friend Casey, and our friend Randy, and I posted the other day that we were like the Ninja Turtles.
Casey's there?
Yeah. Well, yes, he is.
Wow.
Or he was. I posted on Facebook that we were like the Ninja Turtles. I said, I'm obviously Leonardo. I said, Stu is definitely Raphael with the attitude. I said, Kevin is, he's Donatello. I said, but Randy is not Michelangelo. I would say Randy is either Splinter or Usagi Yojimbo. So, at that particular night, my brother Adam was coming to sit in on a class with us. I was like, Adam is Casey Jones. Basically, he likes to break shit, and he has a bad attitude. Adam thought that was pretty funny. So then our friend Metal Mikey from Action Attraction piped in and said, can I be Krang? And I was like, that is somehow very fitting. So yes. So we're still missing our Michelangelo. We need the party hound.
We need the shredder.
Should have known.
He's kind of got the shredder voice. The Turtles.
No. Rocksteady or Bebop.
Wow.
With that note. No, he's Vanilla Ice from the second movie.
With
that note, guys, we want to thank you for listening. Please write us and call us. And until next time, remember to stay frosty, because he's pissed off at me right now.
And peace out, yo.
Yeah. Thank you.
damn God, you stupid, dumb shit, goddamn motherfucker!
This has been a Pinnacle production.
This program was recorded at Seedling Studios and is a Pinnacle production.